Attention, please.
Hey there, welcome back to Back in the Village, the Prisoner Podcast. This week we're covering The General. Only a couple notes on the website this week. I have some information about the movie Dark City that I mentioned, if you're interested. And I also found out why the writer of The General used a pseudonym. So, you can check that out on the website. And that's about it. Enjoy The General. Good morning, good morning. Welcome again to Back in the Village, the Prisoner Podcast. With me again is Wes Teasdale from thepenskefile.com. How are you doing, Wes?
Good. How are you, Clay?
Not too bad. Trying to deal with all of the snow outside, which is why we are on Skype again.
Yeah, I haven't seen another person in weeks at this point, I don't think. It's just I look out the window and I see a few lonely souls walking around.
Yeah, I just discovered a couple days ago that my house is basically a death trap because our roof is angled off towards the sidewalk. So just randomly, at any point, you could be crushed under a falling ice and snow. So
yeah, some of the icicles are getting pretty out of hand over here. Yeah. Anyway, it's just I feel like I should go out in my fire escape and hit them with a broom or something, knock them down. But that is not why we are here. Why are we here, Clay? Not to talk about
the weather. We are here to discuss The Prisoner, and this episode we're talking about today is The General.
Yes, it is The General.
And it was directed by Peter Graham Scott, and it was written on the show. It says it was written by Joshua Adams, but on everything else I've seen written about it, it says it was written by a guy named Lewis Greifer.
Okay.
And I've yet to be able to figure out exactly why that is. I can only assume it was a pen name or something, but I'm not totally sure.
Yeah. I feel like you'd go with the show liner. It must be a pen name or something.
Yeah, it's on IMDb, it's on Wikipedia, it's, you know, in the trivia they use his name as the writer, so I don't know why it says Joshua Adams on the show.
Yeah.
If I find out, I'll put it in the notes or something. Cuz clearly my research is great. Number two this week is Colin Gordon, who we've seen before in the episode A, B, and C.
Yes, our first repeat, right?
Right, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But just to give a brief summary of what's going on in this episode, this is the first episode that the plan that number two is hatching has absolutely nothing to do with number six.
Yeah, that's funny because I feel somewhat similar in this same number two's plan in ABC.
Mm, okay.
This one's definitely a little bit stronger in that regard, where this it has nothing to do with number six being personally drawn into the battleground,
right,
per se. But I do feel that this number two's general way of being just seems to be to not really involve six that much.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of a problem, not to show my hand, but yeah, I mean, continue with what you were going to say about it.
Mm. Well, it's the basic breakdown is that number two and his board of directors, I guess, have instituted this thing called Speed Learn, which is...
I swear to God, I saw an infomercial for this while I was in middle school. I distinctly remember a guy making like an okay sign with his hand and finger and running it over a page, and he could claim to read like a page of text in 5 seconds.
Oh, that sounds vaguely familiar. I've definitely seen something like that.
Yeah. Yep.
And Speed Learn is this program that allows you to learn in a 3-year course of study in like 3 months or 3 weeks,
right,
or something like that.
Because we're on the British university system, so 3 years is the standard instead of the American 4.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry. It's a 3-year course in 3 minutes. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yep.
And they do this by broadcasting over television. You watch the broadcast and you glean all the information. And
it's a low tech matrix upload.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
Of this community,
To quote our friend the professor, Speed Learn is nothing less than a revolution in educational technique. The latest figure shows a 72.4% enrollment in the 3 years and 3 minute history course. Many thanks and congratulations.
And number six is more curious about what's happening than he is actively involved until he's brought in by number 12, who is a dissenter, who explains to him or shows him how Speed Learn is something nefarious.
Yes.
So then number six sticks his nose in, mucks it up, and is then caught while doing so, and the punishment for catching him is introducing him to the general who is running this whole show, who turns out to be a, by 1960s standards, a,
a very portable advanced, computer.
Yeah, a very advanced portable computer who can answer any question posed to him, or it, rather.
Right, and we'd actually heard the general in the previous episode,
right? Right, yes. They make reference to the general at the end of The Schizoid Man.
Yes.
And filled with hubris, number two offers number six the opportunity to ask it any question. He, of course, in his undercutting way, asks the question, why? Yeah. W-H-Y question mark.
Yep.
And the thing blows up and explodes.
And yes, and kills the two.
Kills, right. It kills number 12 and it kills the professor who is writing up all the lectures.
Yeah.
And number two is then sad. And number six is kind of indifferent.
Yep, in his own way. Yeah, that's a good plot synopsis. And I think that in general, the way the episode, 90% of your explanation focused on the last 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I feel that's the only part of the show that matters.
Yes. And okay. Well, if you're going purely from a plot standpoint, yes. I feel like this one, as we've talked before about the three different kinds of episodes on this show, the ones that are about breaking number six, the ones that are about more metaphorical, allegorical things, and the ones that are just like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if?
Right.
This one definitely falls under the second umbrella of metaphorical and allegorical.
Yes.
The plot itself, I don't know. I think there's some issues with the plot. Some certain things that don't make sense if you're just going through it beat by beat. But I think I really enjoy it from the metaphorical end. I think they do some really, they raise some interesting questions about, the idea of standardized testing and brainwashing.
Yep.
And everybody being forced to learn the same thing. It's a very interesting, some very interesting concepts they play with.
Yep. We're probably going to disagree heavily then on this. I thought this episode was kind of junk. I didn't like the first four acts, and okay. I thought that the one metaphor I did like is kind of ties into the brainwashing thing.
Mm.
But I didn't like the show's kind of now hitting a age where the concerns about their technology seem like super silly and dated.
Mm, okay.
So it's hard to appreciate this in a modern sensibility. But outside of that, yeah, I'm sure it will certainly make for an interesting discussion because I didn't like the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that the theme makes sense at the end in terms of where we now stand with technology and things like that.
Mm, okay.
So, I mean, what's the best way to go? But like, what would you say is the what's the main overriding theme of this one to you?
The main overriding theme, I think it is a little tough because I think you're right about it being broken up into kind of two sections.
Yep.
Because I think it does take quite a turn once they do the thing at the end with the computer.
Yep.
I think the theme of the first half involves, as I was saying, the dangers of state-run education to an extent,
yep.
where if you're in this totalitarian government, and they are the ones who are giving you your learning.
Well, I think that's not to interrupt you, but I think that's the problem. It's like, I don't know the history enough. Were they saying incorrect historical facts?
No, I honestly don't know. I'm assuming they weren't, but I think it's more about the potential application,
right,
than the actual application.
And I think that's a problem, because if the episode doesn't focus on what the actual problems with this is, mm-hmm. I look at it and I'm like, that's fucking fantastic. Like, he learned so much information, and it's not like it's wrong, or at least it's, I'm not smart enough to realize if it was wrong. I went through the episode assuming all these facts were correct. Mm-hmm. So if they went, you know, this would be a terrible example, but if they took like the Holocaust or something,
right,
and you know, and he was obviously saying like the Holocaust did not happen, blah, 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 whatever. Mm. I'd be like, oh, that's why this kind of learning is flawed. But instead, right, he seems to know more about like the Baltic states than anyone should ever know. And it's like, wow, that's kind of cool. He learned all that information so quickly. What a great thing.
The subject of tonight's lecture is Europe since Napoleon, a hard, complicated 6-month study. Ladies and gentlemen, sit back, relax, watch the screen. We're going to cover it in 15 seconds flat.
But they do make a point to accent that what the people aren't learning things. They haven't learned anything. They've just been implanted with it, because there's a point on the beach when number 12 confronts number 6, and he says something to the effect of,
why did it happen? He asks him, why did it happen? Right. Instead of why.
Right. He number 12 explains that he's on number 6's side and wants to destroy the general and the professor. And as he's leaving, he asks him a question. He says, why did, for ease sake, I will drop it in here so I don't have to remember exactly what it is.
What was the Treaty of Adrianople? September 1829. Wrong. I said what?
Yeah, it's like, why did this treaty or something happen? But yeah,
why did this treaty, and number 6 spits back the answer of telling him what the treaty was, that this is the answer that he's been giving for the past 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Everybody knows this. And he says, no, I didn't say what, I said why.
Yep, yep.
And, you know, that's touching on a little bit that what these people are learning is not, it's just memorization and implanting memories. It's not actual learning.
Right.
And that touches on it a bit. And also there's the big boardroom meeting scene where number 2 is kind of there with his circle of James Bond villain type cronies.
Yes.
Talking about the, unless I'm misremembering it, I think they talk a little bit about their plans for this moving outside of the village.
Yes. I definitely agree. This is one of the few shows, I think it's because they don't focus on 6, where you're actually starting to get an idea that the village has like global aspirations.
Right.
They've kind of mentioned it, I think, in Big Ben, right?
Yes, number 2 makes reference to,
they want to export this sort of ideology or whatever onto the rest, right, of the world. Make the whole world a village.
Right, that is number 2's dream.
Yeah, right.
Go ahead.
No, I find that much less interesting. Like, I wish the show didn't try to do that, because I'm more interested and them trying to break number 6,
yeah,
than I am in them sort of being like, this is a global application that we're trying to do. Where I don't, you know, because the confusion of it makes sense when it's only 6. When I'm confused as to why they're trying to export this into the rest of the world, I become more hesitant to buy into it.
Okay.
It's like, I need to know why this is happening if you're trying to actually export this everywhere. And also, I think it ties in because I agree with what you said, that like they are learning facts, but they're not learning how to apply them, basically, would be the way. Right. Like, they're sort of learning multiplication tables without learning how to do, like, how this would help you in the real world kind, right, of thing. I just think the show doesn't do a very good job of laying that out for people. And it goes out of its way to sort of make that fuzzy.
Well, I think you're right about us having different opinions on this, because I actually, the why and the how of its external application doesn't actually interest me at all.
Yeah.
I think this episode is great at doing my favorite thing that this show does, which is using the village and using the story that they're telling completely singularly in and of the episode itself.
Yep.
So, yeah, what you're saying is, you know, you wish you could you learned what the nefarious applications were outside of the village, et cetera, et cetera. I don't care as much because I like the way that they can change and how malleable the world of the village is to fit whatever kind of story they want to tell.
Right.
For instance, the scene that I actually really like, or one of them anyway, is the very first scene where Number Six is sitting at a coffee shop, and over the intercom comes this a voice talking about the upcoming exams and all that kind of stuff. And what I noticed about this scene is that they've gone out of their way to make this like a college age crowd, where everybody who's sitting there is between, it looks like they're between the ages of like, I don't know, 18 and 30.
Yep.
And up until this point, why would the, if you're looking at it from a realistic, logical reason in the context of the show, why the hell are there people that young in this village? I mean, realistically, there probably shouldn't be.
Right.
But they go out of their way to use the village and the concept to build this comment on education.
Yeah.
Going so far as to create this first scene as with a college age crowd. They replace "be seeing you" with the phrase "best of luck on the exams."
Yeah.
And it's they change the workings of how things have gone up to this point to back the, for lack of a better word, the message, or at least the ideas that they're putting forth.
Yep.
And I really like that. I mean, I feel like you don't really get that in a lot of other shows, because you're such a slave to continuity of characters or ideas that you're not allowed that sort of leeway to just, you know, add in whoever you want. Like, for instance, I mean, number 12 in this episode at one point says that he's been there for a very long time, but in the last episode, obviously number 12 was number 6's double.
Yes.
So,
a little confusing. Right.
But, I mean, if you're looking at it in the context of a week-to-week thing, it's very confusing. But, I mean, who the hell knows how long time is supposed to have passed between those two episodes and, you know, the world of the show.
Yes. No, that's true. And I think, you know, out of all the shows I've seen, I think this is the most glaringly out of place that I've seen in the order that we're watching. We can touch on that later. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Frankly, sir, I think we're going the wrong way about it with him.
You mean about the professor?
We indulge his idiocies far too much. He's a crank and should be treated as such.
You think so?
So, I mean, in your opinion, is this guy for or against what's going on here?
I believe he's against what's going on. He's... I think the idea behind him is that he is, as far as allies go, or at least people who are not number two that number six interacts with.
Yep.
He's very young, and he is a college-aged-looking kind of guy. And I think that is, you know, probably not an accident.
He has the most intense relationship in a weird way that six has had in a strange way. Like, and I know I've talked about this in previous episodes, but you could write some kind of, like, homosexual thesis about this, because
that's true.
This guy is the most like number six. He's kind of abrasive, and number six has had problems with everyone else who's come into his world up to this point,
right.
At least how he regards them suspiciously, and he seems to really buy into this 12. Like,
right, that is one of the problems. I mean, like I said, the plot wise, I think this episode has a lot of issues. Like, I have no idea why he trusts 12 at all. Given everything he's gone through up to this point, there is no reason he should trust this guy at all.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't want to be And the last time he trusted someone, he ended up getting whaled in the nuts. Like, repeatedly. It's like, I don't see what he's... And it's just, it's also because this number 12 does not come off, you know, completely trustworthy. He's like the least trustworthy person that he's trusted so far. And it's
right.
it just seems very strange to me. It's a very... I mean, I had a real problem with pretty much everything. I watched this twice. Mm-hmm. And the first time, it didn't make any sense to me up until the very end.
Yeah.
And then the second time, I was like, oh, maybe I missed something. Mm-hmm. And I watched it again, and nothing really changed. Yeah. It's all just sort of... The first... the episode's probably 45 minutes. So it's probably like the first 30 or 35 minutes up until they... there's a scene where they're walking in a circle as they're going to the general. They're walking through like hallways.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was fitting because up until that point, I had felt like the episode was just sort of walking in a circle. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of fixed itself. I was really confused by this 12 because I agree with you. I think he was not in on it.
Mm.
He is anti the establishment, just as number 6 is.
Right.
But I didn't get why. The show never made any effort to tell me why I should trust him or why he's doing this.
Yeah, he's as much of a double agent as anybody who has been in this position in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't, whereas usually it's 6, I'm here to help you. I'm actually helping number 2.
Yep.
He doesn't trust this guy. This time it's 6, I'm here to help you. I'm acting like I'm helping number 2, but I'm actually helping number 6. But again, he's not given any explanation as to why he's against it, really. Or why
the audience should trust him. Like, if you're setting this up, you need to give the audience a reason to sort of buy into this guy. Mm-hmm. Because the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, when's he going to betray number 6? Oh, he's dead. I guess he was never going to betray number 6. Like,
right.
So his death kind of came as a, if they're trying to go, you know, because you're supposed to appreciate it for its like somewhat of nobility at the end because he's sort of, I don't even know if he sacrificed himself, but I suppose you're supposed to feel bad because 6 is
I was just gonna say I think the script sacrificed him
because you can't have this character returning.
Right.
Yeah.
Him and the professor are both characters that you can't just have running around.
Right.
There's been a few characters like that we've run into in the past where it's just, well, you have to get rid of this character somehow. So,
right.
You know, sure. They get electrocuted by the giant computer. Why not?
Yeah. I'm totally down with that. I just think for the quality of the script, you have to write that in. For a reason. You know, we just got done with Tasha Yar's death in Star Trek, spoiler for anybody. But the reason why her death sucks is because it doesn't add anything to the story. It just happens. And you're like, well, they obviously just wrote her out. And I feel it's the same way with this guy, which is weird because if you wanted to, you know, fashion the script into something, you have his sacrifice mean something, and it ultimately does not mean anything.
Come on, we'll give you a lift.
Where to?
Home. 100% entry, 100% pass. You know what the general said.
Who's the general?
Come on, you don't want to start the term with a black mark.
All right, let's go.
6's entire involvement in the plot of this episode is basically just based on curiosity.
Yeah, it is.
Like,
yeah.
It's one of the reasons, I mean, we'll talk about this later as well, but it's one of the reasons why I think this fits later in the series, because it's like his response to this shit is, I've got nothing better to do, I may as well fuck with this guy's shit.
Right, and
you know?
it's also like the 2s have gotten tired of him, and are just like, fuck it, like, let's just do something else, and he's like, hey guys, I want to be involved in the plot.
Like, there's an episode coming up, that is almost entirely, if I remember correctly, it's almost entirely about 6 destroying number 2 for basically no reason. Like, it's just the fact that he hates number 2 and anything number 2 stands for.
Right.
The episode is just him driving him into the ground, which is a lot of fun. But at least he's got, you know, he's got like a drive in that one.
Yes.
And this one, it's just sort of like, yeah, this speed learn thing seems kind of weird.
Maybe I should investigate that. Yeah.
Yeah, and then he finds out, oh yeah, there could be some nefarious uses for this. This professor guy seems to be under duress, so his curiosity is the driving factor more than anything else.
Yeah,
even when he's
yeah.
talking to the professor's wife, it's like he's only doing that because he's trying to figure out who the general is.
Yep.
But, you know, it's like he doesn't really care that much.
No,
there's the thing, he finds the recording, he finds a tape recorder on the beach, mm-hmm. Which has a recording of the professor's actual feelings about Speed Learn.
Yeah.
The professor is this character that they've imported to the village to write these lectures that everyone's getting, that's memorizing through Speed Learn.
Yep.
And he is presented on TV to the public as someone who's espousing the I think that's the right word, benefits of Speed Learn, how great it is and all that kind of stuff. But in reality, he knows how awful it is and what it could be used for, and he's for some reason recorded this onto a tape player that he's buried on the beach.
Yes, I mean, I don't need to touch on it, but nothing about that tape recorder made sense. Like,
no, because like what I was going to say was, Six picks that up, and there's a response back and forth with him and number two, where number two's like, you know, I know you want to get out of here. Maybe if you give me that tape recorder, we could work something out. And he's like, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. And then later on, he's like, oh, by the way, two, here's that recorder you wanted. I don't really need it for anything, and I know you're not going to let me out of here,
right.
So here. And that's the last you hear of that.
Yes.
So it serves no purpose other than to...
alert him to the plot, basically.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah.
But it did create my favorite scene in this entire episode is when Six goes back for the recorder that he is buried.
Yep.
He goes back later that night, and he sort of digs around, and he can't find it.
Mm-hmm.
He hears rustling in the bushes, which is 12 mm-hmm. spying on him. And he proceeds to casually start searching through the sand. He starts, like, just sort of casually wiping his hand through the sand because he doesn't want someone to know that he's been looking for stuff. He doesn't
right.
He doesn't stop digging the hole. He just kind of slows down the amount of digging that he's doing and then casually gets up and walks over and grabs him out of the bush. I just appreciated his choice there as to how to shake someone on your tail is to do what you were doing less intensely and they will stop following you.
Right.
But, I mean, did that like horde of students drop that tape recorder?
I was under the impression that the professor dropped it. That scene makes no sense to me. I don't know why they're chasing him down over the beach.
Yeah, and that's the professor, isn't it?
Yeah,
okay.
I don't know if it's supposed to be some sort of like, you know, Hard Day's Night Beatles type situation where those are like his adoring public that are chasing him.
Yeah,
or something.
Or it's like that's the British spring break or something. Like that's what happens when they go out there. But yeah, they chase him and apparently like beat him into unconsciousness and then just carry him back, right? Because he's like limp when they're bringing him back, or as I remembered anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so many things with the professor specifically that don't really jive with me. Like, I don't know why they have that thing where he's laying in bed, but he's really a wax dummy. You know, and the implication that his wife might be the general is kind of weird.
I didn't understand any... I don't want to drag this into negativity. You need to bounce me back with some positive... I didn't understand why... What's the point of his wife? What's going on here?
Yeah, honestly, I don't know.
The scene where he smashes the dummy with a stick is the greatest. I take that back. That is the best scene because I actually thought he was hitting the guy in the face. And it was kind of a fantastic little reveal that it's just a dummy.
Right.
It's not the, what's the Silence of the Lambs one where the guy is laid up in bed after Hannibal Lecter like bit his face off?
Oh, Hannibal.
Hannibal.
Gary Oldman as...
Old guy.
I forget the character's name.
Yeah, the guy who feeds everyone to his pigs. But he basically comes up to that kind of guy in bed and just hits him with a stick and it smashes mm-hmm. his face, and his face is a plaster mold, I'm assuming, of his wife, that his wife has mm-hmm. been making.
Yeah, the wife is an interesting character in that, yeah, I don't know exactly what her plot-wise, her role serves no purpose other than to be a really lame, you know, I don't even want to call it a red herring, because there's really no implication that she's anything other than what she says she is.
No, there's no distraction from the story.
Except for that one drawing that Six does. Apparently, in addition to being an Olympic-level fencer, boxer, and wood carver, he is also a fantastic color pencil artist.
Yeah, he's like the greatest example of those guys you see on the beach where they charge you $10 and they draw your picture. Because he draws, and she's wearing a general outfit, right?
Right, yes.
So he draws the professor's wife wearing a army uniform and with great coloring, like just fantastic artwork, and he gives it to her.
It is another indication of his distrust of women, though, because he immediately assumes that this unnamed general person is actually the professor's wife.
Yep.
Which is, but again, they never really do anything with, and he doesn't really follow through with her at all.
Yeah.
Not altogether flattering. So art's your subject, too?
No. Military history, generals, and that kind of thing.
I'm afraid you may be wasting your time.
And in that scene, she's like showing, I don't even know what the point of this is. She's showing like how art is made, and there's a guy tearing pages out of a book. And he's.
I think that I was watching that again today, and that episode, I mean, that sequence, I feel like it could go either two ways in terms of what it's supposed to say. One of which being condemnation of standardized types of learning.
Yep.
By showing a alternative method of education, in that, you know, these guys, you know, basically one of those schools where you can, there are no grades and you can do whatever you want, one of those kind of things.
You're right.
I forget what they're called.
Yep. Very liberal, like Hampshire College up here in the Northeast or something.
Yeah, it's just an example that not everybody learns by being bound to rigid rules. But I also think you could read that scene as being a complete mockery of that idea, because the stuff that she's showing these people doing is kind of preposterous.
Well, right. I mean, I'd be inclined to think that it's a mockery, because it starts off, right, as a guy tearing pages out of a book and he's throwing them on the ground. And she goes, well, in order to create something, you must destroy something. It's like, oh, that's kind of clever. And then it cuts.
Well, that's when we find out that the professor's wife is actually Tyler Durden.
That's right. Yeah, and he just starts punching himself. But then it cuts to a girl standing on her head.
Yep.
And you're like, well, that's kind of silly. And then the wife goes, oh, she sees a new perspective. You're like, it's still kind of silly, but that's okay. And then it cuts to a guy's passed out in a chair. And she's like, you can only learn if you're not aware of learning. It's like, well, that's just idiotic. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
I wish she hadn't given the explanation, because that would have been a good.
That's a good comedy bit.
Yeah, if he's just, oh, well, he's just asleep.
Yeah, if they hadn't done that, I'd agree that it's not a mockery. But I have to believe they're sort of, the writers are making fun of this.
Yeah, because it could be that her. I say this as someone who spent 4 years in an art college. It could be that her end is supposed to be the other end of the education spectrum that they're commenting on, where one end is, you know, hyper-standardized testing, and the other end is, hey, man, nothing matters. You learn when you want to learn kind of crap.
Right, yep.
But there's nothing really, if that's the case, it's just one of them they're showing as being dangerous. The other one they're just showing as being kind of silly.
Yes.
It would be great if they really kind of made a stand on the idea by having a scene where number six is just reading a book or something, or just or learning chemistry by experimenting.
Right. Exactly. And I think that's sort of my problem here, is that this show has a lot of themes running through it. And the show itself takes no stand whatsoever on any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, so at a certain point, either your idea is outdated, like the idea that this computer is a threat because it can calculate shit fast, or it's like, it's giving us this sort of philosophy on education where it's not telling me either way is wrong, or it's not giving me good examples as to why this is a flawed system, besides number six just doesn't like it.
Right.
And I just don't agree with number six in this episode. Like, I don't agree with anything that six posits here for this show. And a lot of that is because of the time. You know, when this came out, I'm sure maybe this had more implications than it does now. Mm-hmm. I don't buy what Six is selling, and too much of the show, and by show I mean this episode, is trying to sell me something that I don't think the show even knows what it's selling me. Okay. And I have a problem with that, and eventually it settles down, but I didn't understand the point of the wife. I didn't understand her. I thought she was making those sculptures for the hidden cameras.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, that's because a lot of them are the statues they use. It's just a repursing of a prop, basically.
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah. Although, yeah. I did like his sculpture of number six.
Oh, right, yep, yep. Yeah, and you can see they repurposed one of the Leo McKern sculptures from Chimes of Big Ben is there, too.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Very good. You really have a considerable talent.
What are you looking for?
I would have thought that with all these privileges, we might find at least one study of the general.
I had one question for you.
Sure.
Sorry, you said you thought this episode should be later?
Yes.
I can't remember. What did you think about ABC?
I think ABC should be after this one.
Oh, you... Wait. Yes. We watched it backwards, right? We watched ABC first. Yes,
well,
obviously.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, we may as well get into that since we're talking about it.
Okay.
So, number two this week is a number two we've seen before. He was present in A, B, and C. And one of the big... reasons, well, A, B, and C being obviously the third episode, this is the fifth or sixth,
six.
I can't
remember. Six. Yeah.
And one of the big arguments for the change in episodic watching order is that in A, B, and C, he refers to himself in the opening credits as, he says, I am number two. But in this episode, he says, I am the new number two.
Right, yep.
And the other big distinction is that he plays it very differently in both episodes.
Well, in ABC, he's desperate. And right. His desperation makes sense if this show comes first, because he's obviously failed.
Mm-hmm.
And the way, if you watch it in the order that we've watched it, his sort of neurotic desperation in ABC doesn't make sense when he's calm and collected in this one. As you watch it afterwards. So mm-hmm. I haven't had a really strong opinion about episode order, but if you're watching this, I would definitely flip ABC to be after this show.
Right.
If I was only allowed one change, that would be my change so far.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's the one change that really stands out as it needing to happen in order. I mean, because like you said, it doesn't make sense if you go the other way, especially if you watch General and ABC back to back, watching the General first and then A, B, and C. It actually works really well because, as you're saying, his franticness, you've got a basis for it,
right?
And it's like A, B, and C is a complete reaction to what happens in the General,
right? You understand why he's willing to sort of rush the science,
yeah, and why he's really out to crack number six,
yeah, exactly, yeah.
I think I looked it up, and the production order is they did the General first, and then they did A, B, and C. So they did film them in the correct order.
Right.
Again, if that's wrong, I'll put it in the notes. And one of the things I liked that they carried over is the milk thing.
Yes, I was very happy with that as well.
Which I didn't realize. I just thought was something having to do with drinking milk before you go to bed or something like that, but clearly it's this number two's
it's his thing.
It's his thing. He just enjoys milk.
Just loves room temperature milk. Big glass of it too. Pouring it down his gullet.
Yeah. They use a lot of the old repurpose a lot of sets in this one too, which is fun. They use the the council room in Schizoid Man is the boardroom in this episode. They have that weird, like, Masonic-looking thing at the head of the table, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's all kind of obvious because it's all that domed room. But that really, honestly, did look like they just took that the Weakest Link set and then put a table in the middle of it. And just
I'm sorry, I said Schizoid Man. I meant Free for All. That's where he goes to meet the democratically elected council.
Yes, that set is identical, except they put a table in the middle.
Right. And, you know, I really enjoy that stuff, too, you know, because obviously they spent a lot of money on this stuff, so you got to get as much out of it as you can.
Yeah, I think it makes a narrative sense. You know, it's sort of that the village is always changing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see it as a flaw that all the things are in the same room. I almost see it as like evolution of a plan, kind of. The repurposing makes sense with the various things that they do. The only drawback is that every plan that happens, I can't take seriously because of how quickly it's changed. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right. It's this may seem like a really long reach, and I'm not trying to compare them entirely, but
this is nothing like Avatar, Clay. I know you're going to go there.
If you look at Avatar purely from a metaphorical standpoint, Wes, I think you will find that the unobtainium is clearly a metaphor for whatever Speed Learn is supposed to be a metaphor for.
I guess you've convinced
me. You can read my thesis on this topic at avatarisprisoner?.com.
It's a beautiful website. I'm sorry.
What I was going to say was watching this, obviously, as we were just saying, it's just repurposing things that they already have so they don't have to spend more money on what was, I'm sure, was a huge budget to make new sets and stuff. But that stuff plus the idea, like you said, everything is constantly changing and moving around. It kind of feels like, did you see the movie Dark City?
Yes, I did. I haven't seen it in a long time, though.
Again, it's not a one-to-one analogy, but it's like the idea in Dark City about how when everybody goes to sleep, the mechanics who are running the prison that everybody's in or whatever is actually manipulating the physical world, and certain characters who fall asleep as plumbers will wake up as police chiefs.
Right.
And have no memory of the... It's got that kind of weird dreaminess to it, which is one of the things I've always loved about the show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a lot of that could be chalked up to budgetary restrictions, but hey, as I may have said in the past, the best things, for whatever reason, come out of budgetary restrictions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do not attempt to pass without using the key. Second occasion is fatal. Session time in 8 minutes. Your business, please.
Lecture approval session. Education. New member.
Proceed to pass.
I don't see that as a problem. I don't see the reuse of sets ever being a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes think that it's just drastically here, but the script just didn't pull it together for me.
Yeah.
And it's not even, you know, because I think you could argue that this is the most surreal out of all the episodes.
Yeah.
Even including the dream episode, ABC.
Yeah, I would say this one and probably Free for All are the two most surreal. And because the dream one is again, obviously it's a dream, so you know whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
Yep.
But Free for All and The General are both very much happening now.
Yeah.
And again, like I've said, the thing I like about both of those episodes is the stuff that they do, I think probably better in Free for All than they do here, is for the benefit of the story or the analysis of an idea that they're trying to do in that episode.
Yeah.
So you've got things like we were talking about in Free for All, the brainwashing of Six, and the when he is elected number two, all of his supporters immediately turn on him, that kind of stuff. It's a very surreal kind of dreamy thing if you're looking at it just from a standpoint of plot or real life.
Yeah.
And you get, I think they don't do it as well in this episode, but it is very surreal.
I feel like Free for All is grounded in something. Mm-hmm. I think that this one, maybe not even surreal would be, this one is the most like avant-garde of all the shows, because you know, I feel for the first, as I keep saying, the first 30 minutes of the plot mean nothing. To mm-hmm. like they sort of put themes in there, but they don't really draw anything on it. And mm-hmm. then there's a lot of like little touches, like the outfits they wear when they go to meet the general.
Oh, right. Yeah.
They're wearing like top hats with tuxedos and sunglasses at the same time. Yep. They never say why they're doing it. It's kind of a cool touch. Yeah. And the other thing is the security code they used to get in. They put a little coin, and it's like a little toy box that a little hand comes out and grabs the mm-hmm. coin and pulls it in. It's just weird. And it's like, that's sort of what I mean by surreal. It's sort of like this sort of stuff that doesn't make sense in any way. It's just kind of building the universe. And yeah. I felt that this was the most, this show, this episode probably had the most situations where I'd be like, I don't know why they did that. It's kind of cool, but I don't understand why it's in this show at this point.
Right. I think it's probably like in Free for All, we were talking about the truth test.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is a very out there visual way to do what amounts to a lie detector scene.
Right.
And I think probably as far as the top hats and that kind of stuff goes, they realize to an extent that this scene that they have to do is number six going undercover to break in, to follow these guys down a corridor through a security pass into a boardroom.
Right.
And you know, if you just lay it out like that,
you need to put up some window dressing.
Yeah. You gotta punch it up.
Yep.
And you know, punching it up in The Prisoner is going to be a lot different than if you were to punch it up on Danger Man or Mission Impossible.
Right.
Or something.
Yes.
Like
yes. No, I'd agree with that. It's yeah, it's definitely not necessary to the plot, but it does sort of disguise the fact that he's just tailing people into another room.
Mm.
Now, ask the general.
A question that can't be answered.
What's that?
There is a question that the general cannot answer.
Impossible.
Allow me to ask it.
No.
Are you afraid?
I think my biggest problem with this episode, as much as I like the ideas, is I don't think they had enough ideas to run a clear thread through the entire thing.
Right, yep.
And I feel like the whole thing at the end with the general could, I don't know, that could even be like its own thing. Like, I kind of feel like that idea in and of itself is really interesting.
No, I think that's why I like it. It's because
yeah.
the show had a bunch of themes going for the first half hour. And mm-hmm. it, like I was saying, it wasn't picking a side. It wasn't saying
right.
anything. Mm-hmm. And at the end, even though I totally disagree with what they're saying, it was at least mm-hmm. picking something and being like, this is what we're trying to talk mm-hmm. about.
Well, do you think that it's necessary to present these ideas and concepts and take us, do you feel it necessary for yourself that they make a stand on it? Or could you, more so than if they were to just present the questions and let you kind of, you know, stew them yourself?
They can present the questions, but the mm-hmm. the problem is that six is so emotionally invested in this mm. that the show wants you to take his side. So it's not like, you know, this is not like Breaking Bad or something where you're, mm-hmm. you're sort of seeing somebody make bad decisions and being like, oh, this is why it's a bad decision.
Right.
The whole show is driving you to be like, six is correct because the system that they put him in is so bizarre and sort of soul crushing.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything that six does, I want to be the sort of moral censor of the episode. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, or, and it's the problem with this is because, as we said, he's just sort of along for the ride in this one. Mm-hmm. He's not even particularly invested in anything.
Right.
And I think it's a huge problem for me as a viewer to watch this and be like, what the fuck are you talking about? A, because your fear, your phobia of technology is absurd in this day and age. And B, because six doesn't even seem to have a strong opinion about it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So I ultimately just end up in this place where I'm like, if you want, you know, I'm willing to disagree with six, and I'm
right.
I disagree with him about the end, but at least it gives me a point to be like, that was the point of what the show was trying to do.
Mm. I think, you know, if you're looking at the first bit, as a comment on the dangers of heavily institutionalized learning and, you know, brainwashing. I think they make a pretty clear stand on that, but I think you're right. I think the biggest issue is that Six's involvement is very passing.
Right.
On the X-Files podcast that Kumail Nanjiani does, he points out that the worst episodes of the X-Files are generally the episodes where Mulder and Scully don't actually do anything. And I never really noticed them until he started pointing them out. Where
do you mean they're just sort of passively in a situation?
Yeah, they very passively just exist in the situation, yep, to make quips or whatever, and they don't actually solve any problems or affect the situation as much as they do just sort of, you know, kind of, they're just sort of there.
Yep.
And I think that's definitely what happens in this episode. Obviously he does affect the situation in that he blows up the general at the end,
right?
But that's the only thing that he does that has any bearing on anything else.
Yes.
Even his plan to disrupt the signal of the professor's message, I mean, gets foiled by number two.
Right.
I mean, they catch him,
yep,
because he's an idiot and took his sunglasses off and I don't know. But anyway, that scene featured this week's gratuitous.
Throwing some punches.
Yeah, but it's, you know, that's even up to that point, he hasn't really done anything. He's just sort of been an observer.
Yeah, yeah.
And the only time he has a hand in any sort of action that's effective is when he blows up the general.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. And that exists solely to not have that thing be a part of the future show. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's
right.
His accomplishments only serve to fit the plot of the show and not help him in any way.
What was your question?
It's insoluble, a man or machine.
What was it?
WHY? Question mark.
Why?
Why?
It's such a cynical view of technology, and I always loved that turn at the end where number two very arrogantly says, "Ask it whatever you want; it knows the answer to every question." And he just types in "Y" and the machine blows
up.
Yeah, I
just have to say I was a little disappointed by the question. I was expecting something else. It makes sense in context.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, but part of me kind of wishes they flipped it a bit.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, okay, I can ask it anything.
Yeah.
And he just writes in, where am I and who runs this place? And then, like, number two sees what he asks them and has to, like, destroy the machine until it before it tells him the answer.
Why doesn't number two just be like, why does number six resign? The computer.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Just like,
why doesn't he just ask the general why he resigned?
It doesn't make, I don't know. I see through the plot machinations, mm-hmm, and then just like, this is just a pure technology phobia.
Right. I think the problem with that idea is that it's a very technologically naive look at, you know, the possibilities of computers, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
When I think it would make a lot more sense if the focus was on the people using it. You know,
Well, that's where the education thing ties in, you know, because it's like,
right,
I see, I know you'd mentioned it as like the education is more so as like an institutional thing, like sort of telling people what they should know instead of like how to think about what they know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I see it as this. I think the show is purely a commentary on Soviet policy at the time. Like this is a very Cold War you know, the information being taught to people superiorly is a Soviet thing. Because have you ever seen the film My Perestroika?
No.
It's a documentary where they follow, it's like five or six people who lived through the collapse of the Iron Curtain. Mm-hmm. And what you come away from it is that the Soviet education system was like fantastic. Mm. where these kids know a lot. Like, they're able to quote, like, classic literature and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. they've read all the classics. They can do math very well. And, of course, they're now living in the fallen Soviet Union, so their job situation sucks. Like, there's nothing right. going on for them. Mm-hmm. So I think this show is sort of commenting on that, where it's like, you know, the Soviets could fill you with information, but you're not allowed to use that for sort of betterment. You know, it's taking a very us against them sort of stand on it.
Oh yeah, I don't doubt that you're right at all. I think it's definitely a Cold War thing.
And I think that, you know, if you had used that education stuff at the end, you know, it's like if he can use the computer in a sort of clever way because he's thinking outside of the box, where those people are limited by what they know, it would have been more effective. But instead of that, they just flip it to him being like, fuck computers, I can't answer my question, and it blows up. So what's the good of that? Which also ties into my, what was the show we watched before this one? It was Free For All, right?
The Schizoid
Man. Oh, Schizoid. Because in Schizoid, he also has that weird, it has a weird anti-technology theme running through it. And I don't think that's a strength of the show, mostly because I think it's wrong. And I don't think that in modern day it makes sense. But I just think the plot could have been developed through that situation. And if that had happened, where this education had tied into the end of it, I'd have been like, oh, that's clever.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I never thought about that. There, if they had, like, if the twist at the end or the change at the end was that, whatever, somehow Six manages to sabotage the professor's outgoing speech and turns it into something that's actually empowering.
Right, yep.
Or, you know, something that pulls the curtain back on things. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that would be a more satisfying wrap-up on the stuff they were dealing with, yeah.
This is how it works. Allow me to introduce the general.
This is going to be a difficult one, I think, to rate the plan, because it's not really, it's not against Six.
Yep.
But, you know, for lack of, I think I know how you're going to rate this plan, so why don't you go ahead.
Yeah, this plan's a 1 out of 6. I don't understand. I don't understand what the point is here. It really doesn't pull together. What would you put it?
Compared to the other ones, as just a, I would give it, I'd probably put it around a 2, because I understand what you don't like about it, but I also like the idea that in addition to using the village as a way to break Six and break other people, they also use it as a giant experiment, testing ground. And I kind of wish that they had expanded on that a little bit more.
Yep.
Or, you know, possibly in the future. Because I think there are ways you can do a non-Six-centric story that could be very satisfying without the, you know, plot limitations. As much as I've said already, as much as I really do like what they're trying to do thematically, at least in the first majority of the episode, I do think plot-wise it does not hang together very well.
Right, yep. I'd agree with that, and I also agree that I do think it's possible to make an episode of the show that does not focus on Six, but you'd have to come up with... there has to be a theme there. And I think the problem with doing that is you'd have to expose what the point of the village is to a degree.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's the major fallback of that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I don't think the why behind the village is super important.
Do you do you think that the twos know what's going on?
To what extent? In this plan specifically?
In any plan, in the point of the village.
Oh, as in the larger thing.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I don't think the writers know.
Okay.
Because there have been a lot of there have been twos that react in different ways as far as that's concerned, Leo McKern's number two clearly knows that he's a prisoner as well, and he knows that he has his role in the village very specifically.
Yep.
There are other ones that have interactions with higher-ups or people who are leaving that seem to have some sort of frame of reference as to what's going on, or at least who's running this place.
Yeah, yeah.
So I honestly think that's, I don't want to call it a weakness, because if I had to guess, I'm sure the writers probably asked Patrick McGoohan, and he just didn't tell them.
Right.
Because it wasn't an important detail to him.
Right, yeah.
But I think, you know, sometimes it can make things a little murky as far as writing goes.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think that the twos do know what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
All the reasons you listed made me doubt that, but
yeah.
the sense I get from watching is that they know, and that's why this two in particular is worried in ABC. Mm. They sort of know the implications of things.
Yeah.
And that's that. My whole point with asking that question is, like, that's why flipping it would be so difficult, because you'd have to reveal why the twos are doing what they're doing.
Okay.
And I think the show exists better if six is our point of view into things.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely agree. Yeah.
Ah, my dear, I'm afraid he's made a bit of a mess of your masterpiece.
Do you have any more lingering thoughts about this episode?
No, just I didn't want to sound too negative about it, but this has definitely been my least favorite out of all the shows, probably even more so than the pilot.
Just
because I thought, where at least the pilot had a point of view, I didn't enjoy the sort of technical aspects of the pilot in a way, but at least it was clear with what it was trying to do. I thought this was the first show where I was not clear what I was supposed to be thinking or what they were trying to tell me.
Yeah, yeah, that's. I can definitely see that. Yeah, yeah. I agree with your overall thoughts about the episode as a whole, but I do really enjoy this one. As I said, from the metaphorical standpoint that they are playing with,
yep.
Because I really enjoy when that the fact that this show can do that and it doesn't feel entirely out of place.
Yeah, yeah.
It still feels like even if you're not totally down with what it is they're showing you, the fact that they're doing it this way doesn't feel like they've completely gone off the deep end as far as what they can and can't do
right.
inside the village.
No, yeah, and I mean the setup of the narrative of the whole idea of the village makes sense in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to come across as being like I can't possibly like a show that I disagree with.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely.
I just think it's, you know, the great writing to sort of like to bring in the Sopranos. You know, it's like Tony is obviously reprehensible. But mm-hmm. the writing puts you in his point of view where you'd sort of understand it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you have to agree with something, but you have to be given sort of a starting point. And I didn't think that this show did that for this episode in particular.
Mm. Okay, yeah. Well, this will be Wes's last episode with us, because clearly his outlook is way too
The
negative.
Show's run out of gas, guys. Give up. Episode 6. Because how many shows did McGoohan want to do? 7 or something, right?
He wanted to do 7. 7, yes.
Yeah, it's just, I feel if I had to bet my life on it, I'd say this was not one of the scripts that he had in mind when he started setting out.
You know, I'm not sure if there is a definitive list of what those... I don't think it's possible for there to be one, because I'm pretty sure that they started production after they had decided how many, it's not like they wrote 7 scripts and then they were like, we need to do 10 more.
I think
they probably, everything was kind of going at the same time. So I don't know if there's a way to define what his 7 were, but it'd be interesting to find out.
Do you think do you know that he had an overriding story? Did he have an end when he started this process?
That is a very gray answer.
Okay.
Because as we'll find as we get into the last episode, the story is that he was very crunched for time in terms of writing the final episode.
Just the final?
Just the final, because he did not know how he wanted to end it.
Oh, okay.
But I don't think that means that he didn't have an ending, if that makes sense.
Right. You can have an ending, but you're not sure how to get there. if that makes
It's if you think this episode is surreal, not to spoil anything, wait till you get to the finale.
Okay, yeah.
I think you know, at the time when it happened, there are a lot of people saying, you know, in behind the scenes saying that, oh no, we didn't have an ending. Nobody knew how it was going to end. Even McGoohan didn't know how it ended.
Right.
I don't think that's entirely true. I think it depends on how you look at it. I think he, like you said, I think he had an idea of what he wanted to do. Just how he got there was not entirely, you know, he wasn't entirely sure.
Cool. Fair enough.
But yeah, well, we can deal with that when we get
Absolutely.
There. But a couple bits of trivia. One of the actors in this episode is named Ian Fleming, which which is not the writer of James Bond. He is an Australian-born actor, and at this point, Ian Fleming, the writer, had actually been dead for 3 years. Yeah, unfortunately, because I saw that too. I saw that in the credits. Like, Ian Fleming, that's awesome. Wait, who did he play? Apparently, he played Corpse Number 3.
Oh, that's sad. Corpse Number 3. Who were the first two corpses that got billing over him?
In this episode, unusually, Number 6 is never asked why he resigns and never makes an attempt to escape.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
At the time of writing, the writer, his children were studying for their A-levels, which I assume is some sort of
SATs.
Advancement test. Yeah. And were complaining about the rote learning that they were forced into.
Oh, Christ.
The writer has stated that he loves history, but that history lessons at school put him off the subject for at least 20 years, so that probably explains where that came from.
Okay.
And this is the only appearance of the pass machine, which features the hand coming up and grabbing the disc. And the pass machine was actually a well-known novelty bank. It was offered during the 1966 holiday season as the Addams Family The Thing Bank.
Huh.
Copies of this bank are still available, and I will be getting one to replace my lock and key system on my door of my house.
I feel I've seen that bank before. It was very familiar.
Yeah, it's I vaguely remember seeing something like that.
Are they saying that the mechanism in the show was actually one of those banks?
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm sure they needed something for that pass machine and just happened to be walking by a novelty shop.
Yeah, just surreal.
Yeah,
as you were mentioning, just you got to flesh it out somehow. So, you know, a security machine that takes a minute and a half to actually let you through the door is probably ideal.
Yeah. But yeah, that's about it. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Sure. I'm doing a Star Trek The Next Generation podcast, running through all the episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. Clay is kind enough to help me with that. You can go to thepenskypodcast.com. That's thepenskypodcast.com for all those episodes. It's also on iTunes, or you could go to my YouTube channel for gaming related stuff. That's The Penske File on YouTube.
Cool, cool. And if you would like to check out the show notes that go along with the show, and you are not listening to it through our home webpage, our webpage is backinthevillage.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at Prisoner Podcast, or you could email me, and I would be happy to, you know, read your email online or something. I don't know. I don't think there's anybody listening to this yet, so anybody who emails may become the third host of this show.
He will own sole rights to this property.
But you can do that at theprisonerpodcast@gmail.com.
You know, there are podcasts that have like phone numbers where people can call in, and I feel that is the craziest thing anyone could possibly do. Like, what point in your life are you at where you're like, you know what, I'm going to call this podcast and leave a voicemail and let them know.
When was the Treaty of Adrianople?
September 1829.
What happened in 1830?
Greek independence was guaranteed.
By whom?
By Russia, France, and Britain.
Who was Frederick of Augustenborg?
Bismarck's ally against the Danes under Prince Christian of Glücksburg. Frederick, like the Bundestag, had never adopted the Treaty of London in 1852. He, like Bismarck, was not...
I think people are listening. There are certain prisoner... Once you start Googling prisoner, there are a lot of people who have strong opinions about the prisoner. It's just got to get it.
Right, which is, you know, really why I wanted to do this, because I hadn't found, at the time when I originally had the idea, I hadn't found anywhere where anybody was talking about the show. And I think it's a good show to talk
about.
And
it's there's some sort of metaphor There's a metaphor for like when you know when something is brought to your attention, you start noticing it, or it's a psychological phenomena. The recent "How Did This Get Made" podcast mentioned The Prisoner.
Oh, did they really?
For the Zezo with
Zardoz.
Yeah, that movie. They mentioned The Prisoner.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm gonna have to listen to that one. But anyway, thanks for listening, and we will be back next time with many happy returns.
Thank you, guys. See you.
Right. See you later. Well, there you go. That's The General. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks very much again for listening, and I wish you many happy returns for next week. See ya.